Mock execution.
Some called it torture.
Slapping, hitting, and then he sees this confinement box.
They've been running a program that empowers the CIA to take an almost unlimited role in the war on terror.
The CIA said it was essential.
So before 9/11, and there was an after 9/11.
Our people were convinced that we had to try something else, something more aggressive.
The message was, you need to torture people to lead you to your main target.
It's a form of propaganda. This is what happened when, in fact, the facts don't prove that to be the case.
Business is seduction, basically, and to seduce Hollywood producers, I mean, they're easy marks compared to some of the people that the CIA has to go after.
Access to the CIA version of history.
It makes sense to get behind the winning horse. Mark and Catherine's movie is going to be the first and the biggest. It's got the most money behind it and two Oscar winners on board.
A lot of other people who cover the beat, like I did, in that search for bin Laden, you know, we didn't get close to that kind of cooperation from the agency on telling the inside story.
Inside the theater, a raw portrayal of the brutal interrogations the CIA said were crucial to the success of the raid.
The message was, you need to torture people in order to get the information that will lead you to your main target.
You lie to me.
Thank you.
because it's so false.
California Senator Dianne Feinstein was the powerful chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. For years, Feinstein and other Democrats have told a different version of the story, one at odds with the CIA.
It's a form of propaganda so that the general public believes this is what happened when, in fact, the facts don't prove that to be the case.
The senators had access to something no one else did. In a secret CIA location, Senate staffers had been authorized to examine a trove of highly classified documents.
Dianne Feinstein set the committee on this path to do this massive investigation. I mean, that was her objective, to evaluate that question. Were these methods that important? Did torture work?
For years, Senate investigators had been digging into one of the CIA's most secret programs to find the answer.
They've given up 6 years of their lives in many respects to comb through all that material, 6 million documents, millions and millions of footnotes.
The 6 million pages of internal CIA documents tell the history of what happened.
They're about the program. They're about all of the prisoners that had been in CIA custody. They are about the cables back and forth between headquarters and the field. They are internal memos about what was gleaned from the interrogation session. It's basically the CIA's own internal raw history of its program.
Caught up between the Senate and the CIA.
Once the report was written, a bitter political fight broke out over making it public.
The battle over making public a Senate report on the CIA's interrogation.
By December of 2014, Feinstein prevailed. The report was at the printers.
Democrats on the Senate Intelligence
Report detailing harsh interrogation.
Now both histories can be examined.
Hello, I'm Jeb Bush. I'm probably pretty much running for president, I suppose. I mean, I'm a Bush, after all. But look, I'm my own man, which is why so many of my advisors work for my brother George. I love him. You know, I got Paul Wolfowitz. I love him, too. He was in charge of linking 9/11 to Iraq, but that's in the past, of course, and really, my top advisor, my go-to guy, is my brother, George, who I love. Look, if you want to play gotcha with some kind of hypothetical, yes, I would have established a phony link between Al-Qaeda and Iraq and juiced it up with bad intel and outright lies, too. There's just no daylight between me and the brother I love. I think if Barack or Hillary had a fun, charismatic brother like that, they would say the same thing. Of course, mistakes were made in Iraq, and less good things happened, but dredging up history that happened over 3 billion years ago does a disservice to those who served and makes apple pie taste less sweet. So just stop it.
Baby.
quite amazing. Life and death is not mystery, and I want to taste it. Step aside of my mind, and you'll find curiosity, animosity, high velocity, like the prophesized meditation. Reminisce on my wonder years, and I wonder if sentiments of my words ain't been so sincere. The sentiment to my nerve that I just persevere. The big thought of falling off disappear to my faith. They say their heaven's real. Analyze my demise, I say I'm super anxious. Recognize I deprive this feeling, then embrace it. Vandalizing these walls only if they can talk. Conversations on contemplate to my dark thoughts. Looking down on my soul now, tell me I'm in control now. Tell me I can live long and I can live wrong and I can live right and I can sing song and I can unite with you that I love, you that I like. Look at my life and tell me I fight. This that final destination, this that fonts of information, this that fonts of inspiration, this that crack the installation, this that quantum jumping, that fist pumping, that bomb detonation. Please don't bomb my nation, and bomb me flew away. I got my control and I'm here. You gon' hate me when I'm gone. Ain't no blood pumping, no fear. I got hope inside of my bones. This that life beyond your own life. This ain't physical for mankind. This that out of body experience, no coincidence. You been dying, fix your shit.
Sun shows Gray lying motionless as several police officers shackle his ankles and load him into the vehicle. It appears to contradict earlier police claims that Gray was, quote, irate and combative. One of the officers, Lieutenant Brian Rice, reportedly threatened to use his taser on the eyewitness who was filming.
Died, and they've died in Ferguson, and they've died in Baltimore. Now, in Baltimore, things seem pretty obvious to me when the mainstream media and the police say that Freddie Gray beat his own head in to death in a police van. I don't know, that sounds kind of suspect to me.
If I decide to run, which I'm pretty sure I will, and I'll be passionate about stuff. I'm Jeb Bush, and I approve this message, and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton would have too if they were in my position. I love my brother and my dad. Is it lunchtime yet?
CIA's insiders.
The footage raises fresh questions about the officer's handling of the incident and their motive for shackling Gray in the first place. Gray died from his injuries on April 19th. His family and attorneys say his voice box was crushed and his spine was, quote, 80% severed at his neck. His death sparked massive protests nationwide. Earlier this month, Baltimore State's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, announced charges against six police officers in connection to Gray's death.
Freddie Gray. Inside the complex legal infrastructure that encourages and covers up police violence. So take us inside that, Matt. In fact, you're writing a book on this subject right now.
Yeah. I mean, I first came onto the subject because of the other subject we were just talking about. I had been writing a lot about why people from Wall Street don't go to jail, and I was interested in who does go to jail in this country, and I wanted to make that comparison. And in doing so, I had to learn a lot about community policing, stop and frisk, you know, what they call zero tolerance policing tactics. And a lot of that, I think, is behind the anger that we're seeing spill out in places like Ferguson and Baltimore, because these new modern policing strategies that we've instituted in the last couple of decades, most famously beginning here in New York with Rudy Giuliani and Bill Bratton, you know, the broken windows theory. What happens with these policing strategies is that it forces police to go out into neighborhoods and do what one police officer described to me as self-initiated contacts. And
get the fuck up! Simon says, get the fuck up! Throw your hands in the sky! The brothers in the back shooting scraps now, what's up? Girls, rub on your dick! When I'm here, you gon' hate me when I'm gone. The mini pity, no fear, I got hope inside of my bones. The calm, the witty.
Investigation into the circumstances surrounding the tragic incident with the death of Freddie Gray. On May 1st, our investigation revealed that we had sufficient probable cause to bring charges against six police officers. As our investigation has continued, additional information has been discovered, and as is often the case, during an ongoing investigation, charges can and should be revised based upon the evidence. These past 2 weeks, my team has been presenting evidence to a grand jury that just today returned indictments against all six officers for the following offenses. Officer Caesar Goodson Jr., second degree, depraved heart murder.
In other words, you have a different neighborhood. You have the affluent white neighborhood where police only show up when they're called. You know, if a body falls out of a window, somebody shoots a gun in a building, they're going to show up. But in Bed-Stuy or in the South Bronx, Police are getting out of their squad cars, they're stopping people on the street, they're questioning them, they're patting them down, and it creates this endless stream of hostile interactions that over time become more, that creates more and more animosity and more room for corruption of the process. And I think that is definitely the background for what we see in places like Baltimore.
Yo, everybody. Hey, what's up? This is Dr. Furious signing in. We are rocking out here at WCOM FM, LPFM, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. I'm Dr. Furious. It is every Thursday at 10 o'clock, and every once in a while I might need to say this show may be offensive to some members dangling. And also need to let folks know, if you want to learn more about the station, you can go to WCOMFM.org. Or if you want to learn more about the Furious George Show, go to FuriousG.blogspot.com. You can learn about the songs we play in the background, because we just don't have time to go through every single different song. If we did, we would, but including like this here, this is a Slug-a-Beg mixed with Dummy. And we've also been playing some stuff, new stuff from Young Fathers, The Shame. It's a brand new album. Also had some brand new stuff from Tom York. We're also cranking into some Flying Lotus, as well as news from Baltimore. What's going on with the CIA, including some craziness relating to evidence that shows that the Zero Dark 30 was complete CIA propaganda. Boom. So anyway, that's what we do here in the Furious George Show. We're going to be spotlighting that, some other stuff. We do it every Thursday from 10 to who knows how long. You can learn more about the station by going to WCOMFM or give us a call here at the station, 919-929-9601. Be happy to talk at you. And learn more about the station if you want to donate or volunteer, whatever you got to do. Let us know. We're going to get back into it. And again, celebrating the indictments brought down today, a couple hours ago, against the crypto-fascist police officers charged. Marilyn Mosby, just Baltimore State's attorney, just dropped it on him. So anyway, it's nice to see that happen, and we're going to talk about that and some other goodness. Thanks for being part of this micro-radio experience. I'm Furious! If this world were mine,
could you say, what was the origin of the broken windows policy, and what exactly have its effects been?
So broken windows was a theory that was espoused by a couple of academics in an article in Atlantic magazine in 1982. And the idea was, if you leave a broken window in a neighborhood, then very shortly after, all the other windows nearby will also be broken. And visible signs of public disorder will lead to more public disorder. So if you crack down on the visible signs of disorder, like people jumping turnstiles, like graffiti, like, you know, the small things, it will have two impacts. Number one, it will obviously crack down on the visible signs of public disorder. People will feel safer walking around in those neighborhoods, but it will also discourage people from walking outside with a gun, or it will discourage fugitives from walking around in the streets, because they know they may be stopped for even the most minor things, and so they're less likely to commit crimes. That's the theory. And this, the tactic that they used to employ this theory, which was stop and frisk, encouraged officers to go out in huge numbers into neighborhoods and essentially, without probable cause, stop people, question them, sometimes pat them down, empty their pockets, and it created, you know, thousands and thousands of interactions.
Yeah. I would like to say rest in peace to Michael Brown.
Yeah. Out of those interactions sprung hundreds of thousands of summonses per year, and a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't have had criminal records ended up in the system because of this new policy. Now, you might argue that it curtailed crime, but it also created this other thing where lots and lots of people ended up in the system.
But is that actually the case, that crime went down in the cities where these policies were implemented?
Well, so criminologists are very divided on this point. Crime did go down. Violent crime went down all across America from the early 90s on. But it went down in cities where these policies were employed, and it went down in cities where they weren't employed.
Depraved heart murder, involuntary manslaughter, second-degree negligent assault, manslaughter by vehicle and gross negligence, manslaughter by vehicle, criminal negligence, misconduct in office for failure to perform a duty regarding safety of a prisoner, reckless endangerment, Officer William Porter, involuntary manslaughter, second-degree negligent assault, misconduct in office for failure to perform a duty regarding the safety of a prisoner.
Of the drop in violent crime is basically an academic mystery in America. And so it's been debunked, this idea that the drop is linked to these policies.
Late last month, Baltimore Police Union attorney Michael Davey told reporters the officers were right to chase Freddie Gray after he ran away when a lieutenant made eye contact with him.
They pursued Mr. Gray. They detained him for an investigative stop. Had he not had a knife or an illegal weapon on him, he would have been released. They know what role they played in the arrest of Mr. Gray. What we don't know and what we're hoping the investigation will tell us is what happened inside the back of the van. He was placed in the transport van, whether he was seatbelted in, I don't believe he was. Our position is something happened in that van, we just don't know what.
Do you think any of the six officers committed a crime that day?
No.
Yeah, unequivocally, and what makes you say?
Based on the information that I know, no.
And reckless endangerment. Lieutenant Brian Rice, involuntary manslaughter, second degree negligent assault, misconduct in office for failure to perform a duty regarding safety of a prisoner, and an illegal arrest.
Years. I've had this sense that everything I learned as a kid about how America's government works is completely wrong. But I had no idea how bad things actually were until I saw this one graph. Researchers at Princeton University looked at more than 20 years worth of data to answer a pretty simple question. Does the government represent the people? Now, this is what they found. This axis here represents...
Officer Edward Nera, second degree, intentional assault. Misconduct in office for an illegal arrest. Misconduct in office for failure to perform a duty regarding safety of a prisoner and reckless endangerment. Officer Garrett Miller, second degree, intentional assault. Misconduct in office for an illegal arrest. Misconduct in office for failure to perform a duty regarding the safety of a prisoner and reckless endangerment. Sergeant Alicia White, involuntary manslaughter, second degree negligent assault, misconduct in office for failure to perform a duty regarding safety of a prisoner, and reckless endangerment. Now that the grand jury has also found probable cause to charge the aforementioned officers based upon the evidence, these officers, who are presumed innocent until proven guilty, are now scheduled to be arraigned on July 2nd. Thank you.
He said, the police union attorney, that to run in a high crime area is probable.
cause for arrest.
Yeah, I don't know that that's true. I don't know that legally you can arrest somebody for running away. I don't think that that's actually the case.
Well, clearly the state's attorney, Marilyn Mosby, said it's not, because the first thing she got them on was illegal arrest.
Right.
At least indicted. They haven't been convicted.
And this is what's unique about the Mosby prosecution, is that not only did they charge the manslaughter or murder charges, but they also slapped on false imprisonment, which essentially said that the whole basis for the arrest was fraudulent.
And it sounds pretty suspect to a lot of people in Baltimore, and therefore we've been seeing a lot of protests, and we'll discuss that with a Baltimore resident.
But, you know, dating back to a 1968 Supreme Court case, Ohio v. Terry, police are allowed to stop and question somebody based on what they call the articulable suspicion that the person is committing a crime. Now, what's happened over the years is that standard of articulable suspicion has been broadened to include just about anything. In Chicago, we have the ACLU has unearthed instances where cops stop people just because they've arrested the person before, which is, of course, not a reason to actually stop and question and search somebody.
Somewhat similar circumstances that have been festering in the community for a while because prosecutors declined to prosecute. And so obviously the Freddie Gray protests were a culmination of frustration from those events. But the bigger issue that's looming over Baltimore now and even over the state, and there's been some developments in that today, is the question of policing in general and policing strategy and how the city should move forward with policing, because, you know, that's at the root problem.
Yeah.
In Freddie Gray's case, you know, you've had a minor encounter with police that turned deadly, and that is true of the other cases that happened in Baltimore, where minor police encounters over minor, not even crimes, debatably crimes, has led to death. And so I think what's going on now in Baltimore is, like, how are we going to approach this systemically to ensure it doesn't happen again.
The U.S. Court of Appeals struck a major blow to the National Security Agency's bulk metadata collection Thursday. TRNN's Kayla Rivara recently questioned former NSA and CIA Director Michael Hayden about this exact issue, the legality of NSA spying. This is what he said.
I share the political culture of the United States. I'm as sensitive about the Fourth Amendment as any other American. That may surprise some of you viewers, but that's a true fact. I would recommend that they learn about what NSA is actually doing, that they not follow the bumper sticker headlines that seem to take the story into the darkest corner of the room every time they talk about it.
Well, now joining us to discuss all of this again is Marcy Wheeler. Marcy is joining us from Grand Rapids, Michigan. She's an investigative reporter covering this ruling. It's, front page news all over. And, your response that these judges were really kind of weighing into this ongoing debate about the legality of these programs, and it's a sharp rebuke to people like Hayden, who have maintained this is legal.
Right. What the decision actually did was the district court judge had said Congress had not permitted the courts to review whether the program was legal itself. The appeals court disagreed and said we can weigh in on whether what the NSA is doing with this dragnet
It may be a furtive movement. That's a very overused phrase. They stop people for all kinds of reasons. Studies have shown that up to half of these stops are actually baseless. And out of that results an enormous amount of frustration in the population because they feel that they're being stopped and very often brought to jail and made to stay overnight for no reason at all. And
what actually is happening in the system that is making this occur?
Well, basically, Baltimore has a history of a very aggressive policing policy instituted under now presidential candidate but former Mayor Martin O'Malley called Zero Tolerance. Mm-hmm. The concept was that you arrest people for petty crimes, standing on a stoop drinking a beer, walking in the sidewalk in the neighborhood you don't live, yeah, as a means to prevent violent crime. But what that led to was an incredibly number of illegal arrests. Hundreds of thousands of encounters with police. I mean, we, as a city, we were experiencing 100,000 arrests per year in a city with a population of roughly 600,000. So it became an incredibly contentious point. Finally, the NAACP and the ACLU sued, and subsequently it was determined that tens of thousands of those arrests were, in fact, illegal. Mm-hmm. So the city has always kind of used aggressive policing as a solution for violence. And I think now the idea is, well, wait a second, maybe this is causing some of the violence or it's way too risky.
Eventually get dropped, and it's just an endless campaign of harassment. It's the day-to-day stuff. It's the day-to-day process of being stopped, dragged to jail, forced to go through the process, forced to sit in a cell with 60 other men, and that's what's really grinds people.
American neighborhoods.
Well, the question is, has that worked? Did the aggressive zero tolerance policy of going after every guy drinking a beer on the street, did that work to any degree?
Depending on who you talk to, some people say it did, some people say it didn't. Martin O'Malley will say it did, that we had a steep reduction in violent crime, although throughout the country, most cities had an even steeper reduction. And at the tail end of it, in 2005 and 2006, the homicide rate started surging forward.
Congress intended to authorize with the language in question, and we think the definition of relevant to is basically ridiculous.
Interrogations were what the CIA did.
So it was a good program, it was a legal program, it was not torture.
And whether it was necessary.
The CIA has lied to its overseers, destroyed and tried to hold back evidence.
Secrets, politics, and torture.
You talk in your piece about a number of the people who've been subjected to these policies. Could you say what happened in particular, the story that you conclude with, Makia Smith,
yeah,
the mother, and how she was, what happened to her?
So Makia is, she was driving back from a Wendy's. She had her two-year-old in the back of her car, and she saw police arresting somebody, and among other things, she saw them putting their knees on the person's head, a young African-American man. She got out of her car and started to film the incident, and because of her getting out of the car and filming, the police got upset. They focused their attention on her. They dragged her out of her car by her hair. They eventually arrested her. They took her away to jail, and they left her baby in the back of the car. She ended up having to get a stranger at the side of the road to take the baby, and she was, you know, calling out her mother's cell phone number so that these two, the stranger and the mother, could connect.
previously indicated, my office conducted an independent investigation into the circumstances surrounding the tragic incident with the death of Freddie Gray. On May 1st, our investigation revealed that we had sufficient probable cause to bring charges against six police officers. As our investigation has continued, additional information has been discovered, and as is often the case, during an ongoing investigation, charges can and should be revised based upon the evidence.
A jury found the police in the civil case not negligent in that instance, but it's the kind of thing. I mean, when I talked to her, she said her whole conception of the police, the government, everything changed after that incident. I mean.
It didn't drop to its historic lows until they switched to a different policy that was a little more targeted zero tolerance, called targeting policing. But so I think the debate is open because you can't really, marry this crime statistic to say, well, you have a lot of drug dealing and you got to get people off the corner. But yeah, I mean, I don't think what was going on in the streets of Baltimore is very American in the essence, because literally we have more police than almost any city in the country. You couldn't go very far without getting stopped by an officer. So I don't know if you call that American.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I
had to ask you one thing, because we can't ignore sort of the elephant in the room, talking about the sort of racial aspect of things. And what I wanted to ask is, do the people who are in the protest, do they feel that this is specifically a race thing, or is this a government versus man thing?
Now she says she would never call the police,
The story that you conclude with.
Police got upset. They focused their intention on her. They dragged her out of her car by her hair. They eventually arrested her. They took her away to jail, and they left her baby in the back of the car. She ended up having to get a stranger at the side of the road to take the baby, and she was, calling out her mother's cell phone number so that the stranger and the mother could connect. A jury found the police in the civil case not negligent in that instance, but it's the kind of thing. I mean, when I talked to her, she said her whole conception of the police, the government, everything changed after that incident. I mean, it's going to be changed forever. Now she says she would never call the police, for any reason. And I think that's what goes on a lot in these neighborhoods.
great question, and it really is one of the defining questions of this whole thing in Baltimore.
Station where we saw the site of so many peaceful protests over the last more than 10 days or so.
Policies I talked about and all the in-custody deaths are all African-American and disproportionately targeted African-Americans. So I would say in some sense it's a race issue. But if you watch the protests on the ground evolve over time, by the end of the week, it was completely non-racial in a sense. It seemed like a wide range of people across the city sort of protesting this idea, you know, of governance that I think everyone can kind of relate to, which was, you know, this idea of punishment and having a punitive system and a system that was out of control that was hurting everybody. So it evolved. I mean, I would say the beginning point was a racial conversation, but as the protests went on, you saw more and more diverse group of people sort of petitioning the government in a way that I think was highly unusual. So
people have a bad experience. It colors their perception of law enforcement and the government forever.
Almost 500 pages long with thousands of footnotes. The report is sharply critical of what the CIA did.
I mean, I'm a Bush after all, but look, I'm my own man.
Based upon the evidence. These past 2 weeks, my team has been presenting evidence to a grand jury that just today returned indictments against all six officers for the following offenses. Officer Caesar Goodson Jr., second degree, depraved heart murder.
And then when something like Freddie Gray happens, it gets people worked up into a frenzy that is totally understandable.
And I read recently an article where the author claimed that it's interesting with a lot of the race issues, especially in Baltimore, because the mayor is black, and the author claimed that the majority of police in Baltimore are also black. Now, finding out who the mayor was very easy. Finding out the racial composition, oh, I don't even know my own language anymore, composition was very difficult to do. So the question is that true, that it's actually a situation of black policemen tend to also beat young black men more often?
The city's police department is 47% African-American. And yes, it is true, the mayor, the police commissioner, the city council president are African-American. And it is true that in cases I've covered of brutality, African-American officers have participated. And in fact, in the case of Freddie Gray, 3 out of the 6 officers who have been charged are African-American. So, you know, I think that does present a dilemma for the question of, you know, what role race plays in this policy. But one thing that is undeniable is that the targets of all this policing, regardless of who's administering it or prosecuting it, are African Americans.
And she saw police arresting somebody, and among other things, she saw them putting their knees on the person's head.
murder, involuntary manslaughter, second degree negligent assault, manslaughter by vehicle and gross negligence, manslaughter by vehicle, criminal negligence, misconduct, regarding safety of a prisoner.
Hey everybody, look, it's late night time over at WCOMFM.org. LPFM, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, 103.5, where we here at WCOM like to rock out, bang, bang, in the midnight while we go off on some crazy bogusness in the news, like police officers and Baltimore, who just got indicted today, which is cool. Also, we been spotlighting some other craziness, all of which seems to thread together secrets, brutality, whether it's the police or the CIA or Jeb Bush, Brother Bush. And we also crank into some crazy beats, like there in the back. Lord Raja, check him out. And we also had a bunch of the new young fathers tonight, Rise and Shine and the Shame Song, new Tom Thorne, York, and boom, lots of other goodness. Go to WCOMFM.org or check us out at FuriousG.blogspot, where you can see all of our old Furious shows. I'm going to keep it going here to who knows how long. So thanks for doing what you're doing. Listen to Micah Pyre Radio. I'm furious!
What's the scene there? What do you see?
About a number of the people who've been subjected to these policies. Could you say what happened in particular, the story that you conclude with, Makia Smith,
yeah.
the mother, and how she was, what happened to her?
So Makia is, she was driving back from a Wendy's. She had her two-year-old in the back of her car, and she saw police arresting somebody, and among other things, she saw them putting their knees on the person's head, a young African-American man.
Policeman, do your duty. Here comes Diane with the American flu. Keep it with, keep it wobble, keep it do the stick. I bet you can't find me, you can't do it.
shooting myself last night.